Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Listeners should refer to the disclaimer in the episode notes and at the end of this podcast.
It's long been, I guess, thought of that bonds and equities are sort of moving opposite directions. So it's always good to hold bonds because they tend to rise when equities fall. And that's true to a certain extent. But over time, if you look through a very long period of time, that relationship can be quite unstable. And there are periods where you have bonds falling and equities falling at the same time. So you can't always assume that if you just hold a passive portfolio of bonds, that will save you when equities are down.
G'day and welcome back to Equity ASA, brought to you by Australian Shareholders Association. I'm Phil Muscatello. Today I'm joined by Matthew Holberton, National Manager, Listed and Capital Markets for Fidante Partners. Hello, Matthew.
G'day, Phil. How are things?
Matthew works closely with his clients to find investment solutions within Fidante's suite of boutique asset managers. So just give us a quick overview about how Fidante works, that you work with asset managers that you partner with.
That's right. So Fidante Partners is the investment management arm that sits inside Challenger. And what we do is we partner with high-performing investment teams to help them establish businesses. They might be specialists in equities or in fixed income. And we also help them go out and raise money. We help them with the back office. We help them with all of the non-investment related functions of a business so that these investment teams can focus purely on investing. And we think that's in the interest of investors and it promotes really good alignment, good outcomes.
And so you select based on performance and
culture, performance, and also, I guess, the need. Is there a need for this type of asset class? What are our investors, what are our Australian clients looking for?
So investors are currently facing the challenge of finding attractive income solutions that offer protection from rising interest rate risk. But let's start by talking about fixed income. What is it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, fixed income is such a...
It's a broad term, isn't it?
Broad term. Yeah. It's a huge market. It sort of dwarfs the size of the equity market that I think most of your listeners would be, you know, so familiar with. But, fixed income, you might hear the terms credit, bonds, etc. These are sort of types of securities within fixed income. They really do drive capital markets around the world. I mean, most businesses and households have a level of debt on their balance sheet. They're borrowing to buy a house. They're borrowing from a bank or a private lender to finance growth or acquisition. So fixed income, it's a behemoth. And I think everyone should pay attention to what's happening in fixed income markets. The main ones everyone probably knows, government bonds or treasuries. And that's a form of investment where you're effectively lending money to the government, or the government is on the other side of that transaction. They're effectively borrowing money from you. And in return, they'll promise to pay you a coupon along the way. And at the end of the bond term, they repay your principal. For the Australian government, it's a AAA-rated government. That is a very low-risk investment for investors. But at the same time, the yield on that investment would be quite low as well. Credit ratings for countries do vary. The major ones like the US, Australia, Canada, UK, Europe, etc., these are the highly rated ones. And then you've got, you know, say some of the Southern European or South American countries that might have pretty poor credit ratings. And those government bonds tend to sort of perform a bit like credit securities. And if you go to, say, corporate bonds, that's where companies are issuing bonds to borrow. So if you're an investor in a corporate bond, you're effectively in investing in the debt part of that company's balance sheet. Companies, if they're large enough, they might get their bonds rated by a public agency. So it's a public bond. And ratings start at AAA and go all the way down to CCC. Double B plus and below is going to be considered sub-investment grade. Other terms that are floated around are junk bonds or speculative grade or higher yield. They all mean the same thing. It's just bonds that are below that sort of investment grade.
And so there's a correlation between risk and return. So if you're looking for a higher return, you've got to take on higher risk.
That's right. So yeah, BBB minus and above is considered safer. But important point to note is that, as you go from, say, AAA down to AA and A, and the Bs go through to that and all the way down to sort of BBB minus, the risk is not increasing in a linear fashion. So even though the letters or the indicators are sort of moving, don't assume that that means the risk is not increasing in a more than a linear fashion. So as you go out the risk curve and as you then drop into sub-investment grade, so BB plus and below, your risk is growing almost exponentially, and therefore you need better compensation for the risk that you're taking. And that's why you see yields in high yield being considerably higher than investment grade bonds. And then you've got other asset classes like syndicated loans, also sometimes referred to as bank loans or leveraged loans. These are tradable loans, huge in the US, and investors can get access to syndicated loans via a number of funds, and also in Australia. These loans, they tend to be floating rate, and they have a sort of a 3 to 5 or 7 year term. But the key point is that because the number of banks have participated in the funding of those transactions, there are a lot of participants, and you can get liquidity in those. So they're still referred to as liquid credit. So all of the asset classes I've just mentioned would fall into that sort of liquid credit bucket because they can be traded. And then below that, you've got illiquid credit. So, what is that? Things like direct lending. So that's when a private lender is lending directly to a company, and they're holding that loan to maturity. So they might be holding it for 3 or 5 years, and they own all of that loan, and they're not willing or they don't have any desire to sort of trade that with anyone. So there's no liquidity in that. But for, as an investor, you can earn a higher premium. It's referred to as the liquidity premium.
Mm. And you mentioned floating rate. Does that mean that the loan itself, the interest that it's paying and the coupon is pegged to a variable interest rate, like in a home loan, for example?
Yeah, that's right. So actually, I should mention that in all of the liquid securities I just talked about, except for syndicated loans, they typically attract fixed rates, and you can get floating rate notes as well. But floating rates, they would adjust maybe on a monthly or a quarterly basis, depending on the conditions in the of the contract. But if you've got a floating rate security, you're pretty much immune to interest rate rises and falls. I mean, the corresponding coupon adjusts automatically, and so your capital value is not affected. But with a fixed rate bond, there is this concept called duration, and what it measures is a bond's sensitivity to changes in interest rates, so the bond price sensitivity changes in interest rates. And it works inversely with interest rates. So as interest rates fall, bond prices tend to rise. As interest rates rise, as we're starting to see now, bond prices tend to fall. And if you've been following fixed income markets lately, you've probably seen pretty horrendous returns from government bonds and investment grade bonds more broadly as well, just over the last 2 years. In fact, I think the government bond index from peak to trough, the global sort of aggregate government bond index, is down about 12% peak to trough, peak in the start of 2021. So it's been a tough time. And a lot of that, you can explain a lot of that by this sort of duration element of sort of return in a bond. But we know that prices can move around face value. And if you were to buy a bond at a discount, let's say you were to buy a bond at, let's say, $95, and it was paying that 5% coupon, and I'm just assuming...
On the face value of $100.
So face value of 100, it was trading the market at 95, it had a 5% coupon, and it had 1 year maturity. If you take into account you've paid 95, you receive $5 in coupon, and then in a year's time you get paid $100, your actual return over that year is about 10.5%. Mm. And that's your yield to maturity.
You were mentioning in your notes about capital gains as being a part of a fixed income strategy. Is that what you're talking about?
That's
there?
Exactly right, yeah. Phil. Yeah. So
because I never thought about capital gains could be part of
fixed income. So people, fund managers, direct investors will be buying bonds at below face value all the time, and, mm-hmm. and if they hold them to maturity, they'll earn that extra sort of capital return. So yeah, you're right. That total return that you're getting out of a bond comes from primarily the income. But if you've bought it low and you've sold it high, or you've bought it at a discount and you wait till it matures at par, you make an additional capital gain. And adding those two returns together gives you that yield to maturity. When interest rates are high, most of your return comes from, and most of your risk comes from that, the interest coupon component. And I guess the capital component is quite small, and you know, so you don't get too big a fluctuation in the capital value of bonds. But at really low interest rates and at sort of zero interest rates, duration's very high. Your coupon's obviously very low because interest rates are low. And so that sort of capital component, you know, the price volatility component or the duration component of your return is very high. And that's where we are at the moment. And we're starting to go through an upgrade cycle. But if you looked at, say, the Global Government Bond Index, the duration in that is about eight years. And that means that for every 1% rise in interest rates, you'd expect that index to fall by 8%. So something that all investors need to be aware of, because government bonds, don't just assume they're defensive because the credit risk is low. There are a number of other risks in fixed income. It's not just credit, it's interest rate risk and also liquidity risk. So that risk, I guess, is best explained by, well, when you want to get your money out of an investment, can you get it at the market price, or do you have to actually sort of sell it at a discount, or what one might refer to as a sell spread?
So Matt, what's the role of fixed income in a portfolio then?
Yes, look, I think it's got a number of roles.
I think for a lot of investors, it's they want income because that's what it says in the title.
Exactly.
But it's not as easy. It doesn't sound like it's as easy as that.
Yeah, and fixed income, as we've sort of talked about before, there are floating rate securities or investments out there too, so it can be a bit of a misnomer. But fixed income, we think it should play a defensive role in people's portfolios. We think it should provide capital stability. Obviously, income is probably the most important part for a lot of our retired listeners. And then lastly, I think a risk diversifier. So something that can offset your losses in equities when equity markets are down. And that's a really important one, because it's long been, thought of that bonds and equities are sort of move in opposite directions. And so it's always good to hold bonds because they tend to rise when equities fall. And that's true to a certain extent. But over time, if you look through a very long period of time, that relationship can be quite unstable. And there are periods where you have bonds falling and equities falling at the same time. So, can't always assume that if you just hold a passive portfolio of bonds, that will save you when equities are down. So I think it's those three things. One of our managers, Ardea Investment Management, they have a fixed income sort of active ETF that trades on the ASX. It's got a ticker of XARO. They've actually put together a defensive fixed income checklist, which highlights, I think, what they think are the most important features of fixed income.
And so what is that checklist?
Yeah, I'll go through that.
And I'll just preface this by saying it does sound like active management is really key to this, because you can't just sit there and passively watch.
Yeah, I believe so. Active management and diversification.
Yeah.
Because, as I mentioned before, if you just invested in the passive government bond index, a year and a half ago or so, you're down about 12%. And that's because, as I mentioned before, the high level of duration in the index, 8 years, and very low yields. So what we're looking for, what we think makes a great defensive fixed income fund or investment, is one that can deliver you consistent, positive, absolute returns. So it's not just about, beating a benchmark or beating the passive funds or the index. It's about, consistent, positive, absolute returns. Number two would be tight volatility controls. Because, we want this thing to be quite stable. We don't want to, be having really high returns 1 month and big negative returns another, because that tends to scare investors. It's hard to stay in investments like that. It's much easier to stay invested in something that has low volatility. And if you stay invested over the long term, you get the benefits of the asset class. Number three would be, that minimal correlation to equities. And that's something that you can test for over time. In the very short time, say days or weeks or even months, they can sort of move together sometimes. So if you look at it over sort of a 1 year, 2 year period, that's what we're trying to educate investors to sort of look beyond just the, you know, the very short term. Think sort of 2 years and beyond. Number four would be highly liquid, especially in times of stress. So I guess you can find out by looking at a fund's track record, looking at their spreads over time. You can inquire, you can do your research there to find how was the liquidity in that fund in the GFC, if it was around then, or how did it perform in that March quarter of 2020. Number five is a bit of a bonus one, but it's inflation protection. I think that's quite topical at the moment, you know, with inflation starting to, you know, get quite high. So does the fund have features that can protect you from rising inflation? And then lastly, number six would be tail risk protection. And, you know, what I mean by that, I'm not talking about a dog. I'm talking about, you know, those extreme events that are unforeseen. We might call them black swan events, for those of you who've read that book. Events that do happen. I mean, no one predicted that COVID would happen. No one, you know, not many predicted the size and magnitude of the scale of what happened in the GFC. But those are significant events. And are there strategies within the portfolio that can protect in those extreme scenarios, that can soften the loss?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You referred previously to private credit. What is that and how can investors access that?
Yeah, great question, and it is a growing area. So private credit simply is just non-bank lending to corporations or, you know, businesses. And traditionally, that sort of corporate lending was dominated by banks. But in the US, if you go back the last couple of decades, with bank consolidation and, I guess, post-GFC, you had changes to capital requirements of banks and so forth, you've had this growth in non-bank lenders, because they're not governed by the same sort of capital requirement issues as banks are. So banks have sort of retreated, they've consolidated. They tend to play in the syndicated loan space that I talked about before. So these are transactions that are too large or often too large to be in the sort of private credit space. But yeah, middle market companies want to fund acquisitions, fund growth. You know, 30 years ago, they would have gone to their bank, but typically now they might go to a private lender. We have one in our stable called Ares Management Corporation. They're one of the largest middle market private lenders in the world. So they dominate in the US and Europe, and they've recently set up operations in Australia. We have a couple of funds there. One is a sort of a daily liquid managed fund. Another one is for wholesale investors only, which is a sort of a quarterly liquid fund. But that taps into private credit. You can either access private credit via an unlisted managed fund. Mm-hmm. It might have very limited liquidity. It might be quarterly, or it might be sort of annually or every 2 years, or it might be fully closed-ended. You put all of your capital in and you have to wait 7 or 10 years to be able to get it out. Or there may be liquidity events along the way. Or the other way, as I said, is that listed investment trust via the ASX. And there are a number that sort of operate in Australia. They might be broad corporate lenders, and they might focus on, say, real estate, because that is quite a large segment in the Australian market. Yep. So Challenger Investment Partners Asset Management offer a monthly liquid fund that gives you a blend of public and private credit, and that targets sort of cash plus 3%. There is a wholesale-only fund that targets sort of cash plus 5%, and that holds more private credit, because it's, you know, extracting more of that liquidity premium there. And then via our joint venture with Ares Management Corporation, we formed Ares Australia Management, They have two funds as well, similar in a sense that we have one that is offering or targeting about 3-4% income, and that's a blend of mostly liquid credit. It's sort of the best of liquid credit in the Ares credit group. And then there's a wholesale-only fund, which has quarterly liquidity, and it invests in a blend of public and private credit, and that sort of targets around sort of circa 6-8% pays income. Both of those funds pay income monthly, but yeah, for your listeners, that first one, the 3-4% income, is a retail fund. The other fund, the 6-8% sort of target return fund, that is a wholesale-only fund. But maybe your listeners will be interested in an ETF version of those, of the 3-4% sort of target return fund. And we are looking to make that available as an ETF later this year. So that's something to get excited about.
You mentioned XARO. And what are the other ETFs that you've got, and what else is in the pipeline?
So yeah, XARO, managed by Ardea, and that sort of targets sort of cash or CPI plus 2% with sort of 2% volatility. We've got XKAP, or XCAP as we call it internally. That's managed by Capstream, one of Australia's sort of oldest and largest fixed income managers. That ETF is listed on the Cboe exchange, formerly Chi-X. That ETF targets sort of a cash plus 2-3% return and has a volatility budget of 1.5%. So those are the two that we've got listed today. But we do have a couple in the pipeline. That Ares fund I talked about, the Ares Retail Fund, which is the Ares Global Credit Income Fund, that is targeting sort of 3-4% income, paid monthly, very low duration. So, you know, predominantly floating rate securities in that fund. With interest rate risk, it's very low, and also has pretty tight volatility controls as well. So that one is hopefully coming soon to the market later this year. And then if we look beyond this year, there are some sort of sustainable or ethical or environmental styled active management strategies that we're going to bring to the market as well. So watch this space. Head to FidanteActiveX.com.au. So that's FidanteActiveX.com.au. And we've got a whole host of investor resources there, videos about fixed income and what active ETFs are. And, you can subscribe to our updates and find out more information and get in touch with me there as well if you want to go through that defensive fixed income checklist.
Matthew Holberton, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Phil. Thanks for having me. And thanks, everyone, for tuning in.
Important. Please remember these podcasts are produced to provide information and education, and they're not designed to provide financial advice, nor are they a recommendation to buy shares in the companies featured or discussed. The Australian Shareholders Association does not endorse or favour any specific commercial product or company. Please obtain independent professional advice before investing. We value your feedback and questions. Please contact us at share@asa.asn.au if you have any suggestions for guests or specific questions you'd like answered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.